Welcome back to Camden Cast, your unofficial Baltimore Orioles fan podcast from CamdenChat.com. I'm your host, Mark Brown, and we are recording this episode in the evening on May the 21st, 2015. The Orioles just this afternoon beat the Seattle Mariners 5-4 in the rain-delayed game. It was kind of cool at first because Steve Pierce hit a grand slam in the first inning, and then it was significantly less cool in the rest of the game. But the Orioles ended up winning, which is great. They're now just 2.5 games back in the American League East, despite being 2 games below 500. I am joined this evening, as I am often of late, by my new podcasting partner in crime, Alex Conway. Alex, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. Much better after the J.J. Hardy single. But yeah, it's going pretty good, Mark. How are you doing?
I am doing pretty well. Much like you, I'm in a good mood and a better mood than I would have been if the Orioles had blown that game earlier. But they didn't blow it.
They tried to.
They did try to, but they didn't.
That's
what counts. Every win looks the same as every other win in the standings. That's what it gets.
Indeed.
So that was good. The Orioles winning is always good, and maybe things are kind of looking up right now, although they're not up over 500 yet, but people are coming back soonish, we hope. I think the dream is Matt Wieters will be coming off the disabled list on June 4th, which is coincidentally the day he's eligible to return from the disabled list.
Yeah, I guess he's going to start his rehab assignment here after the Miami series.
That's what
I think
they were saying.
Yeah, I think the same for Flaherty. So, I think it'll be interesting. I think, you know, Caleb Joseph started off the year really hot at the plate, but has cooled off recently.
As we could have imagined, because, yeah. I mean, you know, Caleb Joseph wasn't just going to be an all-star catcher, much as it was fun to imagine that he would dream.
I think one of the issues sort of down the break even last year, or down at the end of the season last year, was... I mean, he's been catching a lot. LaVarnway got his first start in a while today.
I think today was like the second start for LaVarnway since April the 27th or something like that, I think is what I saw. So, I mean...
Caleb isn't exactly a spring chicken in baseball terms anymore.
Yeah, it's heavy workload there.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, okay. So it looks like LaVarnway started on May the 9th and May the 21st.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple of day games after some night games in there.
Right, and they still played Caleb because I guess they're just that unenthused with LaVarnway. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think they're pretty unenthused with all their catching options other than Caleb Joseph.
Right, Steve Clevenger is still slumming in Norfolk even though he's batting like 330 or something down there.
Yeah. I mean, how much do they have to hate his defense to just keep poor Steve Clevenger down there?
He's even the Baltimore kid, so that would be like a no-brainer to market him if he was any good at all. Look at your Baltimore Pigtown zone. The pride of Pigtown is what Rocky Botka always calls it.
Yeah, you can tell Rock's in his camp.
Give him the nickname.
I think the one thing from last year and the early part of this year is that Caleb's a more than capable backup, which is good after watching the Taylor Teagarden years of horrible, horrible backups for Matt Wieters. So
right.
I think that's at least a good thing because then you can get Wieters a day off here and there. He doesn't have to start 6 days a week or whatever.
He's just not the guy you want to have catching every day. But if you've got, you know, if Joseph can catch like 2 games a week instead of the usual backup to Matt Wieters catches 1 game a week, and maybe you even DH him on one of the games where he's not catching, I don't know. Although I think I feel like Showalter is allergic to having both of his catchers in the starting lineup.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't seem to like to do that.
Just in case somebody gets hurt and you got to avoid the DH or whatever, like, I don't know.
Which I guess makes sense, but I could see, for up to me, I could see putting Caleb in DH against some lefties here and there. But
I think they could manage to work it out if they had two decently hitting catchers who were worth trying to share playing time. I was predicting that Matt Wieters would have the contract year of all contract years before the season began, but being as it's almost the end of May and we haven't seen him even start a rehab assignment yet, I don't know that that's going to come true.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping the same thing because last year before the surgery, he was looking really good at the plate.
Yeah.
But with the, I guess, I don't know if he'd even caught a setback, but
I think it was a setback relative to what the Orioles were telling us, but I don't know that it was a setback relative to if we had had realistic expectations all along.
Yeah, I think that's probably, we were told something that probably was a little too optimistic.
Maybe never actually going to happen.
Yeah. It didn't, I mean, it's, I get, yeah, it didn't seem like it. It didn't seem like it was, because you never really even caught that many spring training games. He DH'd a bunch.
The first one he caught, after that, they shut him down. I'm pretty sure is what it was.
Yeah, so, I think 12 months was probably, because it's basically going to be 12 months by the time he comes back.
Yeah, I think he's going to be like 3 weeks shy if the June the 4th day happens, because I'm pretty sure end of June was his surgery last year. So he'd be pretty much 11 months and some change. A little better than 12, but not as aggressive as 9.
Not 8.
Or 8, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I guess Everett Cabrera is coming back tomorrow. Everyone's...
Now, none of you can see me, but I'm making the wanking motion right now.
I guess it just means less Ray Navarro.
It does mean less Ray Navarro, and hopefully when Ryan Flaherty is healthy, that will mean less Everett Cabrera.
It indeed will. I know I was talking about this in the game thread today with some people, but, I mean... You could Cabrera could be on the roster until Scope comes back, or he could just be cut come like Monday when Flaherty comes back, or whenever Flaherty comes back.
I wouldn't be sad about it.
Yeah, I don't know if I would either. he hasn't shown me much, but I think because I just think for I guess they have. When Flaherty comes back, he technically can play shortstop if it comes to it, if Hardy needs a day off, or and then Pierce could slide to second base.
So Steve Pierce, second base, has really opened up a lot of surprising options for the Orioles. And
it has. And really, I guess he made a...
He hasn't looked terrible.
He had a little misplay today when the ball hit off of Hunter's glove.
Yeah.
And he kind of... Couldn't pick it up and make the throw to first.
Right. I mean, that's probably a play that, like, Scope would have made or something. But it's not like it was egregious. Right. Like
when I heard Hardy was interviewed right after the game.
Oh, I saw that. Hardy was like, it's a little, I forget his exact word. But he was like, yeah, it's a little frustrating trying to get his attention sometimes.
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah. It's like, I can't really get his attention, but if you hit the ball to him, he'll make the play. So I guess that's the best thing you can say about Steve Pierce, second baseman.
Yeah, there's probably many second basemen of whom you can't say that.
Probably. So, you know, I guess that does give him a little more flexibility. But I still think at least by the time Scope comes back, they're going to want to have Flaherty, Hardy, and Scope all on the roster at the same time. So... I don't think Everett Cabrera is too long for this roster.
I mean, it wasn't a bad move in hoping he would come around and have something, but I certainly think it's looking like...
I was a little frustrated by it because it was reported or whatever that he had the option, which, you know, cool, you could just stash him in Norfolk and bring him up when you need him for the entire year. But then after a month, he got the 5 years of service time.
I wonder if they maybe had hoped that they would be able to option him before he got his service time, and then the injury situation just ended up where they couldn't do that.
But now that he lost his option, I mean, he's lost all of his sort of...
Right, there's no flexibility with him.
Yeah.
And in fact, according to Fangraphs War, which is not the be-all, end-all, but he is the least valuable Oriole.
Yeah.
At a negative 0.4 FWAR so far this season.
Well, he's got a 22 WRC plus, which if you don't know, it's a WRC plus is sort of a stat for where 100 is league average. Everything above it, every point above it is like 1% above league average. So he's 78% worse than the league.
You know who's even lower than him?
Ryan Warnway.
Warnway has an 8. WRC plus.
So he is 92% worse than the league average. So that's bad.
Although that might have gone up since he got like one hit today. Oh, he's up to a 24 after today's performance. So he's past Cabrera after all. Excuse me.
But yeah, Cabrera at least gives you someone who can play. He looked pretty good at short, and I guess he hasn't really played second, but.
But he keeps getting thrown out on the base paths, or at least that's my memory of him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
He has a good
prop steal. I wrote the big thing when he was signed about this is what he could do to be good again, and he's done none of those things, and I'm really tired of watching him. So he could easily go away without me caring all too much.
Yeah, I wouldn't really be missing him much. And you know who else I wouldn't be missing much at this point? And it saddens me to say it, of course, because of what he did last year, especially in the playoffs. I'm talking about Delmon Young.
Yeah.
My tolerance level for Delmon has shifted seriously towards the negative over the last week or so, because I'm just starting to have enough of him out there adventuring in the outfield.
Playing singles into triples and outs into doubles.
I believe on Wednesday he passed the number of innings in the field that he had for all of last year.
Yeah. He just... We were talking about this a little before, but I mean, he looks at times fine in the outfield, but then at other times he just looks completely lost, and some of his routes just look like he's weaving back and forth and zigzagging to the ball, and you know, he's bad, and everyone knows he's bad in the outfield, and you know, they're playing him against righties, they're playing him in the outfield. You know, why he was a useful player last year was because you avoided putting him in situations that he just wasn't going to succeed at.
Yeah, he only played in 83 games last year.
Yeah. And he was a useful player in 83 games last year. But now you're asking him just... You're asking too much of him. He's just not... He's not an everyday player. He's not a cleanup hitter against right-handed pitching. He's not an everyday right fielder. He's a... occasional give the starter a rest in right field kind of guy and a DH for some lefties. And
Delmon is currently batting .287, which isn't bad. .309 on base percentage, which is not so good. And .330 slugging percentage, which is abysmal.
His power is just going away this year completely.
I mean, was looking at it earlier, and he's got a slugging percentage below the slugging percentage that Nick Markakis has in Atlanta, which is impressive considering Markakis is only slugging .338 for Atlanta.
Markakis has a substantially higher on-base percentage than slugging percentage.
He does, which, I mean, it's true that the Orioles could use whatever .390 on-base percentage Markakis has, just 386 on base percentage, but this is year one of a 4-year contract, and he's already have no power going on.
Yeah.
Like, eventually teams are just going to throw him strikes, and that'll be that. So, anybody out there who's wishing the Orioles had signed Nick Markakis because their outfielders aren't very good this year, he's not the answer.
No.
He would have
Nelson
just,
Cruz might have been, but.
Yeah. Like, Markakis basically would have cost as much as all of the outfielders other than Adam Jones. And, I mean, in a sense, it would have been better to have one spot on the roster be that. But
yeah, and that's what I always thought Nick Markakis' value was, is as long as he's healthy, you could play him every day. And you could stick him at the top of the order or whatever and stick him in right field, and he's going to give you essentially league average production doing that. And that's not totally invaluable. You just don't want to necessarily pay someone $11 million a year while they're moving into their, mid to late 30s.
You don't want to be getting a 338 slugging percentage in year one of a four-year, $44 million contract.
No. No, you do not. So, yeah. It's, I mean, if you're going to judge, I mean, even with the Cruz thing, because that's been a big deal, because he's been obviously great so far. But if you're going to judge a four-year deal in the first 6 weeks of the contract, then I'm not sure that's a good thing, a smart way to evaluate the contract.
Yeah, there's, I mean, that guy, Cruz certainly has been very good so far. Good for the Mariners that they've got him. You know, I was there on Tuesday for the first game back, and Orioles fans obviously still had a soft spot for Cruz.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he got a very, very decent sustained cheer, and maybe half the people were on their feet when he came up to the plate for the first time in a Mariners uniform. And, you know, he was awesome here last year. It was very, very excellent to have him on the team, so there's no reason to have any hard feelings.
No.
He was on his rebound contract in Baltimore, and he earned a bigger contract, and he went and got it. And he's not on the Yankees or Red Sox, so, you know, no hard feelings for any of that.
Exactly. Exactly.
But I don't know. I don't know that I would want the Orioles to have signed him.
No. I was thinking about it a little bit. If you're getting Cruz envy, if he's on the team, I'm not necessarily sure that Jimmy Paredes is on the team.
Well, yeah, I like think about it, because let's go down the rabbit hole and say, okay, they signed Cruz, so he would have been, let's just say he would get the same money that he got from Seattle, which maybe wouldn't be the case, but just for the purpose of this little exercise, we'll go for the simplest. So he's got a 14.25 million salary for each of the next 4 years. So if you got Cruz, you probably didn't bring back Delman, which would be okay, actually.
Yeah, you're probably not bringing back any of
you probably didn't bring back Deaza.
Yeah.
Which maybe would be okay also. probably didn't trade for Snyder, which maybe would be okay also. I'm doing a bad job of saying they shouldn't have signed Cruz. But
I mean, it's so here's, if you want to put Nelson Cruz in right field like the Mariners are doing every day, which we saw be bad.
Yeah, they still would. I feel like they would have maybe been smarter and at least had Cruz in left.
Yeah.
So then who's your right fielder?
Or you put him in left, you put him in right, you know, you probably bring up someone from the minor leagues, maybe that isn't necessarily ready or something like that.
Maybe
to take
you
the
roll
other
the dice with, like, David Lowe, try to have him every day, and then you just have, like, I don't know, is Mike Yastrzemski your fourth outfielder in that scenario?
Maybe. But Cruz
Dario
really is
Alvarez.
Cruz really is a better DH. So that means, you know, I'm not. And if you have to carry all these extra outfielders, infielders, is Jimmy Paredes making your roster? And so if by having Cruz, who's been great, you lose that production from Jimmy Paredes so far. So I mean, I don't know. It's so hard to go down the rabbit hole like that, but it's easy and fun to talk about.
All of this is also, of course, assuming that they wouldn't just be able to have added $14 million to the payroll for Grins if they wanted to, which I personally am assuming they're near the upper limit of their money.
Yeah, I mean,
for, you know, how, for whatever makes them have that money flow, I just feel like they're near as high as they can go at the moment.
People like to whatever shake their fist at Peter Angelos because he makes a lot of money, but I don't know. I literally have no idea what their spending limit should or could or would be. It seems to me that they're middle of the pack in a pretty small market.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they're like 11th in payroll this year or something like that. So it's not like they're not.
And what I assume has to be a
cheap
bottom 10 or bottom 5 media market with the Nats.
Yeah, the Nats sucking away a lot of the DC, Northern Virginia attention.
Yeah. So you're really just talking about like the Baltimore metro area and like Northern Pennsylvania. Look. Or Southern Pennsylvania. So you're not talking like a huge population base. So I don't know. You know, like you said, it's just you're committing that money for 4 years. So when Cruz is 37,
Right. What's he going to look like in 2017 and 2018 when he's still making 14 and a quarter million a year?
Yeah.
Those are considerations, you know, that Orioles got to worry about because they don't want to be having that kind of.
I mean, if, you know, as a fan, as a person who doesn't necessarily care about the Orioles, like whether or not Peter Angelos signs a big check to Nelson Cruz, I would have liked to have him back, and I would like to have Nick Markakis back because I like those players. But do I get why they didn't sign them? Of course.
And the same with, like, Andrew Miller. I mean, he's been really good so far this year, but it's year one, and he really, you know, Andrew Miller was great last year, but that was literally the only great year of his career.
Yeah.
This last year.
Yeah. Although he was, he's the one I think I might regret the most.
Especially since he's on the Yankees.
Yeah, that too. But it just, him in the bullpen, him like coming out in the eighth would make the bullpen a lot better.
There's one where if you want to play the well, if they're paying him and they get rid of these other guys, like maybe if they had Miller, they would have not brought Brian Mattis back. I just want to tell you all how much it took out of me to wait 20 minutes before we started the Brian Mattis hate hour, because we really probably spent 20 minutes raging about him before we started recording. I didn't want to lead off with that, even though we were both ready to go. But we're unleashing the beast, because let's just say, well, maybe they wouldn't have brought Mattis back, which would have been a positive, but you know, then even if they need, so Miller's getting $9 million a year.
Yeah.
So what are you doing to get, you know, to get the $9 million? Okay. So Mattis is what, $3 million? So
yeah,
what are you losing for that other $6 million? You know, have you decided, okay, we're going to non-tender like Steve Pierce or something? You know, they would have not done one of these depth signings that maybe will prove important. I don't know.
I don't know either. Again, it's one of the things, but maybe it would have been worth it to not have to listen or watch or read about Brian Mattis pitching.
It might have been. I don't know. But I get why they didn't do that one, too, as much as...
Yeah, I get all of them. But, you know, would it be nice if they were all back? Again, like I'd like to watch Nick Markakis play right field because I enjoyed watching him play right field for many years. But it's not like he's not a frustrating player at times too.
Yeah, so. And I mean, we wouldn't want Markakis to be the next Brian Roberts, where he's just like sucking up 10 plus million a year off the payroll for his last like 3 years or something.
Yeah, and I think it's a decent sign for the organization that they're not giving out sort of like the legacy contract.
Give the Melvin Moore a contract extension just because, well, it's just because he was kind of good for some bad Orioles teams and stuck with Baltimore.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that's probably good that they're moving along from that, much as it sucks sometimes. Because, I mean, I don't have many Orioles, and the only recent Orioles player jersey I have hanging in my closet, in fact, is Markakis.
I just have a bunch of jerseys with no names or numbers
That's
on the back.
That's probably the smart way to do it.
Yeah, I thought about getting a Jones one, but I also don't want to spend a bunch of money.
Although, really, the only reason I ended up with a Markakis jersey is because before he started to not be as good, one Christmas, my sister asked me what she should get me for Christmas. I was like, well, I could use a new Orioles jersey. How about a Markakis? And then two Christmases later, after he was not doing as well, was when I finally got the Markakis jersey. But that's okay. I will not wear the Markakis jersey as long as he is actively playing for another team. But, you know, Markakis was a good Oriole, and that will be one that will be fine to bring back again someday, just not now. But anyway, it's good that they didn't just pay him whoever, which actually, or whatever, because I was actually kind of expecting that.
Oh, I think everyone was.
Because it seemed like Markakis was like the Peter Angelos favorite.
Yeah.
Because they're both like vaguely Greek or whatever.
Yeah, they're like Greek and had dinner that one time.
Yeah.
And so it just seemed like it was like destined that he was going to come back, but...
I mean, that to me was the surest sign that we've maybe moved on from the meddling Peter Angelos days.
Yeah, me too, honestly. And that and when Brian Roberts signed with the Yankees.
Yeah, they just kind of let him go, and
said,
that
thanks,
was that.
But no thanks.
The Yankees wanted to pay him $1.5 million or whatever, and they ended up DFAing him before the year was out. It's okay, they didn't bring him back there. But also, I guess, you know, the other thing about the Orioles this year, and I get, probably the biggest problem, as long as we're talking about all this money business, is, and I want to give some credit, I don't know if he will be listening, probably not, but on Twitter, Luke Jackson, who's an Orioles fan who's worth following, I think he's Luke_Jackson10.
Yes, I believe that is right.
He is one of my favorite follows on Twitter, actually. He usually has some interesting insights. So I saw a tweet from him earlier in the week where he was pointing out one of the problems with the Orioles is when you have a lot of your payroll is taken up by guys who are in their third or even fourth bite on the arbitration apple, and they're just kind of not really earning that keep. And it's... That's probably one of the big stories for the Orioles, although it's a quiet story because it's not something all the beat writers are going to hammer. I mean, some of that, I guess, is because the beat writers have to see all those guys every day and they don't want to be writing articles about, oh, yeah, the Orioles are bad because the Orioles aren't doing as well as they could be because, you know, they're stuck paying $9 million to Bud Norris and Bud Norris sucks this year, you know? And, you know, all the people who got to walk into the locker room and talk to Bud Norris, and I'm sure they all like talking to Bud Norris because he seems like a cool dude. If you ever actually just, like, listen to him talk, you know, he's not, like, a dick. It's not like not like Kevin Gregg out there. So, you know, that's left to the rest of us to think about. But Bud Norris getting, like, what is he, like, $8.8 million? And that's almost his ERA. Actually, 8.8 ERA. No, what is Bud Norris's ERA right now? 9.88. So if we multiply his ERA by a million, he's actually not getting that much money. But 8.8 million for 9.88 ERA is bad.
Yeah. So like you had said, I mean, they just have a ton. That's why they have so many free agents, because they have so many guys in their last year of arbitration.
Matt Wieters just has yet to play, and he's making $8.3 million. So, I mean, that's not so much his fault. But, again, I mean, that's a decent chunk of payroll that the Orioles are pretty much – because, I mean, they couldn't have just been like, oh, no, we're just going to let Matt Wieters go. We're not going to pay him whatever next year. But by the same token, Chris Davis, what are you getting, $12 million this year, Chris Davis?
Yes, he is.
And, you know, he's got under a 300 on base percentage.
Yeah. So they just have a huge percentage of their roster is these guys, and a lot of them just, like, even just by the nature of arbitration, and a major league average player is going to end up making 6, 7, 8, 10 million by the time they reach that last year of arbitration.
Yeah, and if as long as they're major league average there, then that's fine. But then, you know, when you're kind of obligated to pay them, because again, with Chris Davis, even as bad as he was last year, the Orioles, imagine if the Orioles had just been like, no, Chris Davis, goodbye. Non-tender Chris Davis. We're going to have Christian Walker be the first baseman or Steve Pierce or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's the kind of, like, they would have gotten killed for that in. Well, not that the fans are what you should go by, but I mean, you know, you couldn't, because he just hit 53 home runs in 2013. So even as bad as he was last year, as much money as he's going to make this year, like, they had to.
Yeah, pretty much. You got to bring a guy like that back.
You can't just give up unless you're really, 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 really sure.
He's going to be terrible. And he hasn't been terrible, but again, it's $12 million. And he hasn't been that good, and he definitely hasn't been better than $12 million worth of, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the problem you run into, is a lot of these players have either, you know, they're not providing sort of the surplus value, if you will, that the Orioles need right now.
Exactly. That's exactly it, Alex, because if you just go dollar per war, whatever, value, like, the Orioles can't go at market value. Dollars per war, and they just don't have that big of a pocketbook, so they got to get surplus value from somewhere. They're definitely not getting it from the guys like Chris Davis who are making $12 million.
Yeah. And when those guys are making league minimum, then you're getting your surplus value. Like Manny Machado's making 548,000. He's providing you a lot of surplus value. And so when like we said, when you have 11 free agents, a lot of that means you have guys in their last year of arbitration. Arbitration means automatic raises. Automatic raises means high salaries. So
I mean, it really is almost automatic because
think it's paid.
I think it's the actual rule is you can't get more than a 20% pay cut no matter what. And that doesn't happen pretty much ever. And really, case in point, we can go back to our favorite punching bag, Brian Mattis. Because if ever there was a player whose contributions on the positive side of the ledger were minimal, you're probably looking at Brian Mattis, who last year had a 3.48 ERA in 51 and two-thirds innings. And for a lefty specialist reliever, that's not good. Like, okay,
No.
so his ERA plus is 112, which is, again, ERA plus is like WRC plus in that 100's average. But for a reliever, you're below average if you're just vaguely above average, if that makes any sense, because the
Yeah, because
ERA
there's
counts all of the starters who kind of get graded on a different curve.
So if you look at like the let me see, hold on. Yeah. If you like the league average ERA plus for relievers is like 90 or something like that. Or whatever, 110. So like he's just yeah. Not good.
So,
You could
as
say it
much
over and over again.
as you might have been annoyed by him last year, as I was, they couldn't just say, "Okay, Brian Mattis, you're not getting a raise." Even Brian Mattis has ticked up. He made $1.6 million in 2013. In 2013, he had an ERA of 3.53, which is again not. You're not getting surplus value out of Brian Mattis particularly at that kind of performance. And okay, so and then he got a raise to 2.4 million in 2014, and again he was just sort of okay, and then he gets a raise this year to 3.2 million, and you can probably imagine he would get a raise again next year, even as bad as he might possibly be this year,
Yeah.
and
I
he'd
mean,
probably get like $4 million next year.
he probably would.
Because
The like you had
you
said
don't
the
get a pay cut, you get a
you
raise.
don't. I think the like you had said the rule is you can't lose more than 20% or whatever, but I don't it's pretty much no one has ever paid less and basically no one's ever paid the same. Everyone gets a raise. I
Yeah,
mean,
it
that
would be a
leader's got a
big deal if
raise.
somebody got like a pay cut or even just the same.
Yeah. I mean, Matt Wieters got a raise after last year. Chris Davis got a raise after last year. You know, these are guys that, Wieters just had elbow surgery and was 2 months of playing time, and Chris Davis had his worst year ever, probably. So it's just that's the way it is. So when you're dealing with those problems, when you have a ton of guys getting all their arb, like especially the people in the three and the four. Because like years one and two, the salary is a little more under control. But when you start to get into the last years, like three and four, especially four for the Super Two guys, which you can look that up and have that explained to you by someone else better explaining it than me. But they're the guys that get the fourth year of arbitration, whereas most players only get three, and those guys can get really expensive.
Jim Johnson, for instance, the Orioles traded him before having to pay him the fourth year of arbitration, which worked out pretty well as it turned out.
Indeed.
But like your first time arb, just looking at someone on the Orioles who is in that situation, Miguel Gonzalez, making $3.3 million this year. Thumbs up. That's great.
Exactly. Surplus value.
That's great. And I mean, Gonzalez, he has been consistent enough in his career that I feel reasonably safe, knock on wood, in saying he, even as he keeps getting a raise, he will probably keep being in the ballpark of at least equal value.
Yeah, so I think yeah, the payroll is bogged down by sort of these high dollar average players.
And Alex, you were talking just earlier in the week on an article on Camden Chat about how the Orioles could potentially be sellers if they needed to be. And one reason why is because of all these pending free agents.
Yeah, exactly.
Because what is the number? They're basically going to clear $58 million in payroll when all these free agents are free agents.
Yep.
So that's a lot of money that they will be able to use to absorb some of their arbitration raises that will surely happen for next year. For instance, Manny Machado, I believe, will be first-time eligible.
Yep.
Chris Tillman will hit his second year, and even as bad as he might be this year, whatever he ends up being, he's going to get a raise over $4.3 million, because again, you get a raise.
You get a raise.
Because it's not just like, they're not just grading him for his 2015 performance, but for the cumulative of his career, yeah. And that,
well,
he has more service time.
Arbitration is a very weird process.
Occasionally rather divorced from reality.
Yes. So all of the arbitrators are not baseball people. They're all independent arbitrators. So a lot of they use like basic counting stats to evaluate like the cases. Like the cases are very strange. And so a lot of it is playing time based. And so if you play a lot, you're more likely to get a raise.
So Chris Tillman, for instance, 200 plus innings each of the last two seasons before
exactly.
this, and if he does his usual wizard whatever and turns it around in the second half and is like throwing 7 innings per start in August and September and still gets over 200 innings again or something, like, you know, he'll get a nice raise again.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if his ERA is 5 at the end of the year, he'll still get a raise.
Yeah, probably. He'll probably still get... He's at 4.3 now. I mean, he's probably staring down $6 million.
Yeah, at a minimum, he's probably going to go up to $6 million. So,
yeah.
So, you know, some of that will get absorbed in that. But, you know, they'll have money
a lot of money coming off the books. Yeah. And if I don't know. I think the Orioles can be contenders this year. Their starting pitching's turned around. If they're able to make if some people start playing better, if they switch out some corner outfielders for some different corner outfielders and they play better, I think that they can turn it around and, you know, compete in this mediocre division.
Here's the thing about the AL East. It's not there. I don't want to say it's a down year for the AL East, but there's no team that's running away with the AL East. The last place team in the AL East at this moment is the Toronto Blue Jays. They are 4.5 games behind the Tampa Bay Rays, who, in the time we've been recording, the Rays won the game they're playing tonight, so the Orioles are now 3 games back. That's kind of crappy. You lose half a game, just you weren't even playing. But no, the Orioles are 3 games back of the Rays, but the Blue Jays are in last, and they're 4.5 back. Now, every other division in the league, the closest last place team is 8 games back. And then you've got the Brewers in the NL Central are 12.5 back. Marlins in the East are 8.5 back. Oakland Athletics in the AL West are 13.5 games back. Cleveland Indians, AL Central, 9.5 games back. That's your last place team in every division. And even the AL East last place team is like 4 games closer. And there, 4 of the 6 divisions have a team with a winning percentage of 600 or better, and your AL East leader presently has a 548 winning percentage. The Orioles are in this, and they haven't been playing with their full A team all year.
No.
You know, I don't think it's foolish to think that they will be an improved team once they get back, for instance, Matt Wieters and Jonathan Scope, whenever those things happen.
Agreed.
And
they can still make improvements in the bullpen, in the rotation, and you know there's ways that they can get better. And like, you know, I think that they're still contenders and everything like that, but if it comes down to it, if the season goes south in the next month or so, they are in a position to sell a lot of pieces off their roster and still be a contender for 2016 with all that money coming off. So, because someone like Wei-Yin Chen, for instance, would be a very desirable pitcher on the market because there's a lot of the contenders right now looking for pitching. Even someone like Chris Davis, a bat, something like that, or Darren O'Day coming out of the bullpen,
Chen and
anything
O'Day
like
in
so.
particular, because they're making like no money relatively. So that's not even like you're dumping a lot of money, or you need to deal with dumping a lot of money on some team. Like, that's a modest expenditure. So you can either not have to worry about paying them off or whatever, or
And so, I mean, a lot of their relievers, I could see them sort of shipping out for whatever they could get. So a guy like Chen and Davis and Wieters, they have the qualifying offers of like, or they're the candidates to be the realistic candidates to get the qualifying offer attached to them. So you could wait. You wouldn't necessarily have to trade them because if you lose them in free agency, you have the theoretical chance to be compensated for them.
right, the Orioles could potentially get three extra draft picks in the mid-30s range for if all of those
Potentially.
guys get qualifying offers, decline them, and sign with another team, which wouldn't be terrible at all if that happened.
And, the 2016 draft, from what I have read up a little bit about it, appears to be a pretty good one. So, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I had estimated they probably have, after arb raises and stuff like that, and with all the money coming off the board and filling out the roster with some minimum salary guys, I would say they probably have around 50 or 40 or $50 million to play with in free agency to sort of pick up a position player or there. So, I think even if this year goes south, and I don't know if it will. Last year they were 500 after May. They could conceivably be in the exact same spot. And really, I was looking at it. They were only four games over 500 in June. So, really, they just turned the afterburners on in July, and they were just great every month there in July, August, and September. So,
End of May last year, things just bummed me out. I distinctly remember because it was like they had a bad series against the Astros or something like that. And, the Astros were bad last year, so let me see. Yeah, okay. So they lost the first two of a four-game series against the Astros last year. And on May the 30th, after losing that game, they were 26 and 27. So you're pretty much in the ballpark of where they were last year. So, I mean, if they can make that improvement like they did last year, I'm not saying they're going to do that this year, but they could
Again,
do better than we've seen so far.
it happened last year. It could conceivably happen again this year.
Like I one of those games, I don't remember which one, but I just wrote this really. Like, I was just so annoyed at the Orioles, and I didn't even feel like writing a real recap, so I just wrote a poem, and every two lines rhymed, and that was my recap. But it was about the game, because, okay, so it was the game they played on May the 29th of last year, because the first line of the poem was, George Springer has hit a lot of dingers, and George Springer hit a home run in the game, and that's why I started with that. And I just kept going on and rhyming, because here's the thing, when you have to write a recap, and the game sucked. Sometimes you just don't really want to write about it, so stuff gets a little weird. Or that's how it works for me, anyway. Which is how you occasionally get MS Paint recaps, and it's how you get rhyming recaps, etc., etc. So that was what happened on May the 29th last year, and I just thought the Orioles were going to stink, and they were just going to keep losing games. And that would be it, and they would be bad all year, and then they weren't. So we definitely shouldn't despair just because they're two games below 500 right now, 'cause the Marlins are kind of reeling right now, so if they go to Miami and 'cause the Marlins have lost seven in a row. So hopefully that means they're not due to turn it back on against the Orioles. If they keep reeling and the Orioles win like two out of three this weekend, the Orioles are one game below 500, and then we just go from there.
I mean, it would be nice if they ended in May around 500 again, then they're in the same spot they were last year. And if they can, you know, if either Bud Norris finds himself continuing on the DL or in the bullpen or on another team or pitching really well again, or, you know, and they replace them with someone who's going to do better. And then they, you know, they've already been able to sort of DL some guys in the bullpen and shuffle that around. So that's settled down a bit. The rotation's settled in a bit. And so I think right now what they're really looking for is going to be those corner outfield spots to really get somebody in there who can hit.
And I think they're maybe starting to signal that that's going to happen soon-ish. Because we've heard Buck Showalter and some others start to talk about Chris Parmalee more, and it seems like the Orioles reporters are giving more updates on him. So Chris Parmalee is in Norfolk right now, and he was just one of their random Norfolk depth signings in the offseason.
Minor league free
agent.
It
doesn't matter until they do matter. Alex, you were the one who had his stats up earlier. I don't know if you still have them up, but it turns out he's doing really awesome for Norfolk.
So he's got this year he's got an overall 872 OPS. Last year he had an overall 920 OPS in AAA, so he's shown he can hit AAA pitching so far. And like we were talking about before, the most interesting to me at least are his splits. In his minor league career, he has a 913 OPS against righties and a 739 OPS against lefties. And this year in Norfolk, it's even more drastic. And he basically has a 1,000 OPS against righties this year at Norfolk. So I think, we were talking about it a little before, he seems like a guy you could probably throw in left field against a lefty. And, you know, you're going to have a decent bat.
At the major league level, Parmalee has actually played a few more games in the outfield than he's played at first base. So that doesn't mean he's going to be a great outfielder, but it means at least he's played there before, and it wouldn't be like a Steve Pierce at second base situation. Parmalee, like Alex said, was a former first-round pick of the Twins. He moved along from there because he basically OPS 691 last year, so he never really hit like they hoped for there. But you know what Dan Duquette loves? He loves giving guys a second chance in Norfolk.
Indeed he does.
And that's how we got, like Nate McClouth. That's how we got Steve Pierce, really. Slumped down there for a little bit.
Captain Lou Ford.
Oh, boy. I mean, Delvin Young was never there in Norfolk, but he was the same sort of second chance kind of player.
Yeah, minor league free agent kind of guy.
He's 27 years old, so he's not like old. He's not not where you would expect he's going to get drastically better. But if there was something, if there was some talent there and he just needed a change of scenery, well, he's got new scenery now. And certainly some of that is, okay, AAA pitchers aren't as good as major league pitchers. But you can imagine a guy who's batting .331 with a .408 on base percentage, .464 slugging percentage through 40 games can probably come up and hack it at the major league level. Probably. Maybe not. But probably. Enough that it's worth taking a shot.
Again, like when we were talking about Delvin Young earlier, it's a guy where he can probably be a very useful player for you if you can put him in the correct if you can put him in the situations that he is most likely to succeed. So if you stick him in left field and hope too many balls aren't hit his way, and you play him against lefties, you're probably going to get a pretty decent player. And right now,
and as it turns out, Alejandro Diaza, an Orioles left-handed outfielder, is scuffling, to be polite.
Yes,
he's having
two more strikeouts tonight, and he continues to not make contact, not walk a lot, and not hit for a ton of power. So he's a pretty bad corner outfielder.
And he's getting $5.6 million, so I'm sure the Orioles don't want to just give up on him. But at the same time, you can't be sentimental over, whatever percentage of his money they still have to pay him. I guess let's just say we're down a third of the season and he's making $6 million. So we can't get sentimental over, oh my gosh, we can't waste $4 million because, you know, you're wasting games right now, which is worse than wasting $4 million.
He's gotten 2 months to show you something, or nearly 2 months to show you something, and his contact rate and his strikeout rate are all very worrisome. He's a pretty good defensive outfielder. He seems like a guy that would be a good fourth outfielder kind of guy. So, you know, and you got David Lowe at a much lower cost to be your fourth outfielder guy. So giving someone else like Parmalee a chance is, you know, probably a good idea.
Yeah, and I feel like they're moving towards making that happen.
Yeah. And, you know, I could see Lowe being the one to get the axe to, but since he's, I consider him a better sort of pinch runner, late inning defensive replacement guy than Diaza, but
not to
I
mention
guess
Lowe,
have to...
they can keep for several more years if they want it. He will be cheap for those years.
So I mean, I don't know if they want to just. I don't know what is more what the Orioles would like better: either eating Diaz's $4 million now or getting rid of Lowe because he's only making $500,000. I would rather get rid of Diaza because you already owe him the rest of his contract anyways, so it doesn't matter if he's playing for you or not. Especially if he's playing bad for you, it hurts you more than anything. So I think he is a likely person to get the boot soon.
That is what I would guess. I don't know when they're maybe going to do that, but you can't ignore that kind of number at Norfolk when there's a guy who can probably play in one of your spots where you're getting a struggle at the big league level.
Yeah. And, you're right.
You can't ignore
the numbers he's putting up.
Really? I mean, the Orioles were kind of in the same situation with the starting rotation and they couldn't ignore Mike Wright down there. And, so once they could, I don't know that we can be sure that, the Orioles did not somehow infect Bud Norris with bronchitis, but we can't be sure that they didn't.
We cannot. You know, I don't know.
So Wright comes up to replace Norris. He had one good start, which is only one start, but, you know, good for him. That's one more good big league start than I am ever going to have, for instance.
True.
And, you know, Mike Wright had the kind of, I mean, not like top end prospect pedigree, but I think people who are those, you know, in that sphere who evaluate prospects feel pretty confident that Mike Wright can basically be a back end of the rotation kind of guy. And guess what the Orioles need right now? Back end of the rotation kind of guy. So if he comes up and he's that, awesome. Because through his six starts he made for Norfolk, he had a 2.64 ERA. So again, that's only six starts and it was AAA, but it's not the surprise that they called him up. And Tyler Wilson and Zach Davies were both down there getting pretty decent results also. And lo and behold, Tyler Wilson made his major league debut Wednesday night. He probably will be a long guy in the bullpen until Norris comes back.
Yeah.
Whatever that ends up being. I kind of hope they extend Norris's rehab period as long as they can get away with and see what things are looking like in 3 weeks or whatever.
You know, Mike Wright, he looked good. He looked better than I think he's had after late some mechanical changes late last year in the spring training. He had the higher velocity than he had had before.
I believe he hit 97 or 98 in the first inning, and he hit also 97 in his last inning.
Yeah, and that's impressive. You know, you could kind of see rookie amped up facing Mike Trout. You know, amping it up and getting a little more mile per hour than he really can. But seventh inning, after throwing more pitches than he had had all year, he hit 97. So, I mean, there's clearly something there. From what I saw, you definitely have a pretty good major league reliever in him. And if you can develop him and get him to work on the secondaries a little bit more, he showed, you know, the changeup. It looked sometimes he sort of telegraphed it and it kind of just fell to the bottom of the zone. It wasn't good. But some other times it had some nice sharp drop and fade to it. And the slider also, you know, at times didn't look great. Times looked better. If he can get those consistent offerings, he could definitely be a, you know, 3-4-5 kind of guy, which is something the Orioles are going to need this year and going forward.
I mean, if we want to go back to talking about your thing about players and their cost. So if Mike Wright can be a back end of the rotation starter, guess what? For the next 3 years, he's going to make in the realm of $500,000. So
yeah,
there's some surplus value on the team if that's your guy, if that works out. So
basically, whatever, even if he's a reliever.
Yeah, that's
if
also
he's a
good.
Starter,
I mean, he probably is good enough that, okay, Tommy Hunter is going to be out of here. So even if he's a reliever, maybe Mike Wright is your eighth inning reliever for $525,000 on a year or something. And if he's good in that role, which I certainly think he could be, you've got your surplus value. And that's the kind of stuff the Orioles need to find.
Especially, yeah, definitely. And then you can use that surplus value to go sign a free agent and fill in a hole or get better at a strength or anything.
Yeah.
That's the idea here.
Now, Wright might give up like two grand slams to Giancarlo Stanton in his next start, and then and suddenly it will be dim.
You know,
but he showed
he
could
was,
do it.
He got, I think he got a little bit, he certainly got a little bit lucky against the start against the Angels. But, you know, he only gave up a couple of hits. I think he didn't walk anybody. He struck out seven. So, I mean, clearly the stuff is there. I think the command probably could be a little sharpened a little bit, and we'll see how he is in his second start on the road, which maybe it's a little less, maybe it's a little more pressure. I don't know.
And now he'll have the big
we'll
staff working with him, so I don't know if that's worth anything or what, but you figure that's probably the best coaches in the organization are up there. So
you'd hope so.
Yeah, I mean... I certainly feel like pitching coach Dave Wallace had some success getting guys to do better last year. Like, it certainly seemed like Bud Norris improved last year. Not that he's carried that over into this year, but last year Norris pretty much like flattened his platoon problem.
Yeah,
I
well,
felt like might have
yeah,
been
last year
Wallace
was...
helping him get his changeup against.
That was
lefties.
The key for him last year.
I don't know why he's not able to do that again this year.
Neither do I, but he's getting bombed by lefties again. So that's one part of his many part struggle.
You got special pitching assistant Ramon Martinez, who's like the Ubaldo Jimenez whisperer or something.
Yeah.
The brother of Pedro Martinez.
I was thinking tonight, I was like, oh man, Ubaldo Jimenez is starting tomorrow. That'll be cool. I'll get to watch him. And then I was just thinking, wow, how quickly things can change.
Yeah,
he's been so good this year. I mean, he's been fun to watch, you know.
That's why all the people are like, oh my god, you gotta just get rid of Ubaldo. Well, you know, there's a reason why they gave him that contract, and it's not because Dan Duquette is a moron.
No.
There was something they hoped that he could be, and he obviously wasn't that last year, but it was in there somewhere.
And we've talked about this before, but his stuff is so good that he could easily be the best pitcher on the roster or one of the top two starting pitchers. So, you know, and so far he's been the best.
At the moment,
him and Miguel Gonzalez
has the lowest ERA of any of the starters on the team.
Yeah. And, you know, he's striking out more. He's striking out. I think he's probably got a higher strikeout rate than anyone else. And, you know, limiting hits, limiting walks. He's been great. There's really nothing else you can say about other than that. He's been great, and that's been fun to watch because he's fun to watch. He can make a lot of hitters look pretty stupid when he's on his game.
I guess if there's one slight knock on him, it's that through seven starts, he's averaging slightly less than six innings per start. Seven starts and 40 and two-thirds innings, so you're a little below where you'd
like. He got ejected.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what it was. That he'd probably be at 42 and six innings per if not for that ejection. So there we go. We can blame the umpire that day. I take it back, Ubaldo. I'm sorry I even said anything.
We'll see how they finish down the stretch here in May. They're going...
The Astros are a gauntlet team right now. Somehow the Astros have more wins than anybody else in baseball. And You know what?
Well, they just
good for them, I guess, because we remember what it's like to just have your team suddenly be good. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. I feel I'm happy for an Astro fan. Why not?
Are there Astros fans? There must be, but I don't know that
They're around. You could have said that about Orioles fans
That's
a while
true.
back.
The Astros
People
are kind
don't
of
want
a
to watch
trendy
bad
team
baseball.
in the quote-unquote cool baseball Twitter sphere because the Astros basically like hired everybody's friends and every
Yeah.
favorite website owners to be on their team.
Yeah, so that definitely got them some good internet PR.
What is, the guy who created Brooks Baseball, I think, works for them. Isn't that Mike Fast? Works for them, and
Yeah.
their PR director was like a baseball Twitter personality. And
Well, Kevin
oh
Goldstein.
yeah, Kevin Goldstein. What is he, the scouting director?
He's
Something ish.
Pro scouting director, I think.
Yeah.
So he basically just like yeah,
baseball
he scouts.
Former baseball
He did what he
prospectus.
did
Yeah.
for Baseball Prospectus. He scouts all the minor leagues.
So that's why the Astros are trendy. But yeah, they're, I mean, 27
Also,
and 15 record. You can't argue with that.
I think they lead Major League Baseball in like home runs, strikeouts, and stolen bases, and they're like the first team to do that since like pre-World War II, something like that.
They
I mean,
they
just
have
hit
found a
baseball.
different path to success, and
Yeah.
that's the
I
way
was
to do it
watching
in
some
baseball
highlights.
nowadays.
Let's watch some highlights. They got Evan Gattis now, and he's pretty ridiculous. He looks like a guy that like chopped down a tree, sort of sawed and sanded his own bat out of it, and then just like decided to go play baseball, and then just hits it. He hit one like over the top of their stadium the other day.
The Astros going into today, I don't know if they played today, but they were batting .231 as a team.
Yeah, I think that's the lowest batting average.
It looks like it is the second lowest.
Okay.
Only the Brewers are worse.
Yeah.
But they have 61 home runs. That's a lot of home runs.
A lot.
Through whatever games they've played, 40-ish, 42. So I don't know. That's a bit of a buzzsaw for the Orioles to run into, but
yeah, we'll see. I mean, who
anything can
knows?
happen over three games.
Exactly.
And of course, you got the two makeup games against the White Sox.
Who they've been playing a little better as of late.
Yeah, they're right about the Orioles level. They are 18 and they will be 18 and 20 if they lose, which they're currently down 5-0 in the eighth inning. So they'll be 18 and 20 just like the Orioles. By the end of the night.
Yeah. So, and then what they finish up with the Rays.
The Rays. First place Rays at this moment. The Rays have one of the best starting rotations in the league at the moment, and that's probably why they're leading the division.
Yeah. Yep. I think that is fair.
The Rays, and this isn't counting today's numbers. The Rays have the second best rotation ERA in the AL, the 3.55. And notably, every other team in the AL East is higher than a 4 ERA from their starters. Got the Yankees at 4.23, the Orioles at 4.30, the Red Sox at 5.05, the Blue Jays at 5.25. That is the worst starting rotation in baseball, is the Toronto Blue.
Oof.
So your AL East rotations through 6 weeks or so of the season, as the kids say, the struggle is real. I think the kids say that. I don't know. The 20-somethings say that. Whatever.
It's been bad. They've been bad.
That's tough.
Yes. So.
So there's why the Rays are leading the division. They continue to do that. They will continue to surprisingly compete because they weren't supposed to be good this year, as I recall.
I thought that they were going to be bad, but they've been pretty good, and I don't know. We'll see. I know some of the projection systems have this being pretty good. So
if we look
win
at
one
the,
of their projection
the current
systems,
FanGraphs projected rest of season for the Rays projects them to go .487 winning percentage for the rest of the way, which would end them up at 81-81. I think they're probably going to exceed David Cameron's little machine here.
Yeah.
And then you have the Red Sox projected to go 529 winning percentage the rest of the season and end up at 84-78 winning percentage. That one maybe not so much. But what do I know?
I don't know.
I don't know anything.
Yeah. I don't know anything either, to be honest. I honestly didn't believe too much in the Red Sox because their rotation was just so bad, and so far it's been so bad. So
yeah, they're not completely sucking despite an absolutely terrible starting rotation.
Yeah,
like especially in the modern baseball run environment, 5.05 ERA is just abysmal.
Yeah. And somehow the Blue Jays are worse. So, the division is ripe for the picking, as we had said before. If the Orioles are able to stabilize, plug in some guys, and have what they had last year, which was a rotation that's going to go out and give you consistency, a bullpen that's going to be better than average, and a lineup that's going to some nights stink and some nights score enough runs, and hopefully... You know, most nights they score enough runs.
I mean, there's reason to believe that they'll be able to shuffle some pieces around and improve some of the spots that need improvement. And if not, there's always guys in hoodies and masks with baseball bats catching up to some of these guys on the way to their car. No, I'm kidding. But there's often a lot of convenient Orioles injuries, which maybe is because... The reason why they aren't playing well at times is because they have been hurt. Yeah. Because baseball players are not above trying to hide injuries and then play poorly.
I think it's mostly Dan Duquette's magical pothole machine.
But, you know, then when they have a case of the sucks and then suddenly they also have shoulder tendonitis.
Yeah.
You know, like Jason Garcia... As we talked about on the last podcast, I believe, where they were just openly, like Buck Showalter was openly like, well, we only need to have him on the roster another 21 days before September.
Yeah.
It's like as close as he's going to come to saying, oh, yeah, we're just going to stick him on the DL for 2 months. And
then hide him on the roster around the All-Star break and then hide him on the roster in September. And then we'll get to keep him and throw him in Bowie next year.
Yeah.
This is pretty much just it seems like it would be like tampering or. Collusion or something, but I guess it's not. So,
as we like to say on Camden Chat, the Honey Badger GM does not give a F. Dan Duquette will always be looking to have the team be the best. It's like a compulsion for him. I feel like he's maybe like twitching without being able to option relievers all the time this year.
I know. I feel like it's been as frustrating for him as it has been for us. He can't just like bring up Bill Hall for a day anymore.
That's got to be like somebody trying to go cold turkey, quit from an addiction kind of thing. That's what I imagine Dan Duquette. He just kind of like wakes up in cold sweats, constantly gripping and like white knuckling wherever he is. Because it's just like the only way he can handle it. I feel bad for the guy. It's quite an abrupt change of routine for him.
As you said, the struggle is real.
Yeah. So hopefully the next time we are conversing with you, the Orioles will be even better. I think we are tentatively aiming for... What did we say? Tentatively aiming for 2 weeks from today.
Maybe doing a little draft preview.
Maybe a little draft preview, because by then... Like, so there was a little mock draft stuff starting to come out today, and it's 2.5 weeks until the draft, so a lot's going to change, but a few days before, it'll be a little bit more clear.
Like you had said in your post on it, it's like Keith Law can say that the Orioles are going to draft Colin Ponce or
Cody Ponce. I don't know for sure that's how the name is pronounced, but that's what it looks like.
Like, you know, it's really, you can listen and... Go read Keith Law and what he says. It's just kind of like after the top five guys, or even the top five guys is a range, and then it's 5 to 10. And then after that, it's like the 15 to 30 guys is a range. So really, whoever the Orioles pick in that range is, you know, and then you can read up about them afterwards. But a mock draft at this point, especially in baseball, is just, in other sports, it's no one gets it right either. But baseball, it's even more difficult just because the sheer number of players you're choosing from.
Like, even if you knew the Orioles were going to pick one of six guys, if you knew it was going to be for sure one of those six guys, there would be almost no point in trying to learn everything you possibly could about those six guys, because the Orioles will get one of them and the other five won't matter because they'll be on other teams.
Yeah.
So why waste your time? Don't waste your time and go down the prospect rabbit hole. Once they're Orioles, then you can get excited. But it's not worth your time.
To me at least, the most interesting part of the MLB draft is just all of its weird sort of machinations and rules and stuff like that, like the bonus pools and who you're going to look here. And if you want to read up on some guys, go ahead. But trying to get a full scouting dossier on everyone you see in a mock draft is going to be if you want to spend your time that way, go right ahead.
It's interesting to kind of get a sense of, okay, what is the general talent level of player that you should expect to be available at number 25? Because guess what? If they were a surefire star, they wouldn't be on the board at number 25. Like, if everybody in baseball was looking at this person and saying, you know what, they're going to be great, they wouldn't last until number 25.
Yeah.
Although, Mike Trout was a number 25 pick not many years ago, but that was...
Those were some weird circumstances.
It was some weird circumstances.
Mostly that he's from New Jersey, and New Jersey just isn't scouted as heavily. And so he's only playing against weaker – he's playing against weaker competition because all, like, the good baseball players are in Florida and Texas and California where they can play year-round. So, you know, being in New Jersey, he's playing against weaker competition. So it's – you know, people just weren't sure how to evaluate him as well. And, well, they were wrong.
Alex, I heard something once, and I'm not sure if it's actually true, but I heard – that perhaps one reason teams were gun-shy about Mike Trout is because the last highly regarded New Jersey high schooler who was drafted didn't do so well. Now, Orioles fans are familiar with this story because that New Jersey high schooler was Billy Rowell.
Oh, I didn't know Billy Rowell was from New Jersey.
Yeah, I don't know if that story is true, but I heard it once and it seemed
and heard about why teams are a little gun-shy on Mike Trout.
And if memory serves, right. It was something like, it was even like a rainy spring in the Northeast in the year Mike Trout got drafted, so there was even fewer chances to see him.
Yeah. So just, you know, that's what the draft can come down to, just random chance. I think if you want to get teased for the draft, I think two interesting names for the Orioles right now would be Brady Aiken, the guy that Astros drafted that just had to get but didn't sign because of a
whatever that was
elbow issue, which is now a full blown Tommy John surgery. He could potentially fall to the Orioles. And then the other guy is from Duke, Mike Matuella, who also had Tommy John surgery, and he could potentially fall to the Orioles.
Speaking of Keith Law, I think I saw him say in his chat today that he expected Matuella to go in the 25 to 35 range, and the Orioles pick at 25 and 36, so that's in their range potentially, so if they're interested in taking
if the flyer. If the Orioles want to get somebody who has potential – higher value than the 25th pick, they could go after one of those guys. But then you're drafting a guy who's already had elbow issues before he's even picked up a ball. So picked up a pro baseball. It's the game you play when you get into the draft. It's how do you use your bonus pool to your advantage? You know, what kind of guy do you want to pick? Who's the best for your kind of system? All that kind of stuff.
Because, I mean, every draft, somehow there will be, like, a low round pick who just comes up and develops into something unexpected, and then they're great, and, you know, that happens. But it's not expected, because if it was expected, they would get drafted, and that's just the way it is.
Exactly.
You never really know, because we're dealing with human beings, and you just can't predict. You can be sure enough, but you can't predict. But anyway, that's all the time we have for tonight. We'll probably be much, much more heavier on the draft next time around. Which, again, And I'm telling you this to hopefully nudge me into not being a slacker, but we're aiming for 2 weeks from tonight to do our next one. So until then, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Camden Chat or on Facebook, facebook.com/CamdenChat. You can see when all of our articles are posted on there. And of course, make sure to check in on the website itself, camdenchat.com. Really all through the day, you will find all kinds of interesting articles. And as long as you're not a moron, you should also sign up and talk to us because we're really nice and awesome Orioles fans. And you'll have a good time. But if you're a moron, then don't. But if I have a feeling if you've listened to all of this podcast, you're not a moron. But just in case you are, don't sign up. I'm just telling you that right now.
You'll get the ban hammer.
You will get the ban hammer. I don't like having to use it, especially on Orioles fans, but it does sometimes have to be done. So, Alex, do you have any final thoughts on the Orioles at this moment in time? It is 11:10 Eastern in the evening on May the 21st, 2015.
Final thoughts. Well, you know, like we have been saying, I think it's just going to be interesting to see how they can finish up this month, playing against some hot teams, some cold teams, see if the rotation can stay stable. And sort of, I think, you know, this might not happen until the next time we podcast, but I'm still going to think about it every day probably as sort of what the roster is going to look like come middle of June. Because I think there's a good shot that it's going to look a lot different. So I guess keep all that in mind.
I am most interested in tracking Jonathan Scope's progress on the way back. Because if he comes back, I mean, he's obviously, well, not obviously, because he technically might, but he probably won't come back and slug 630 like he was doing in the 9 games before he got hurt. But he certainly showed that he has some legit power potential and is really good in the field. So if he can continue to display that, that's going to be a big improvement over what the Orioles are throwing out there right now. So him in particular, but him plus Wieters and especially, that could make a real difference in this lineup that has some Dreck presently.
Definitely.
So fingers crossed that those guys come back. I don't really know what the schedule is on Scope, but Wieters, they're saying June the 4th. Scope, I think they were saying hopefully before the All-Star break, so maybe if he comes in mid-June, late June, yeah. You know.
I know he started baseball activities, so Theo, you think that would sound good for a rehab assignment here in the next week or two.
And then maybe they'll let him go, you know, a couple weeks on the rehab, and I don't know, maybe a month from now we'll have Scope, maybe a little longer, maybe sooner, I don't know. I am not an injury expert.
I think what we all should know by now is trusting the Orioles timelines is a stupid thing to do.
Yeah. But that's where we are. And hopefully Scope will come back and be healthy and do well, because the Orioles definitely need him. Not that the Steve Pierce second base experiment is going awful, but nonetheless, I'd rather minimize the amount that I have to watch that. So that's all we have time for tonight. For Alex Conway, I am Mark Brown. We're bringing you Camden Cast. This is Birdland, and we are out.